championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. Today we're going to be going over the just heartbreaking loss to Oklahoma in the Big 12 Championship. What went on? What are our thoughts on the game? And what are our general thoughts on the entire season as we head on to what's next, National Signing Day number 1, and then the bowl game in New Orleans against Georgia, which is actually kind of cool. It's good for you, Joe. Finally get to go to a city that's kind of cool for once for a game instead of, what, Lawrence on a Thanksgiving?
Man, it's a lot better than that. Kansas City airport area is not bad, but it's Thanksgiving, so a different holiday, a different city. I think it's an upgrade in both.
Yeah, I can't imagine New Orleans on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day even. But
game doesn't start till 7:45 the next night.
It's gonna be crazy. And then after the game, when you're done doing all your writing and whatnot, which it takes you for freaking ever, man. But when you're done with it all, it's gonna be a freaking blast, man. I'm going to Vegas the day afterwards, so I can't actually go to the game. Not much of a downgrade from, you know, New Orleans on New Year's, but
I'm sure that'll be pretty lively too, especially the sports books with all the bowl games going on.
Should be equally as crazy. I've only been there once. Came back, I think it came back $2,000 up. So definitely looking to lose $2,000 in Vegas. I'm up. I'm playing with house money forever. But let's go ahead and get into the Texas-Oklahoma game. Because, I mean, man, it was just all the emotions, Joe. All the emotions. Losing to Oklahoma, it sucks.
Yeah, that's, you know, especially after you do it once before, could have had an opportunity to kind of get rid of that curse, I'll say, that losing streak you have, or just not good history you have in teams and rematches, like Colorado, Nebraska, now Oklahoma joins that list. And, you know, it's a team you beat earlier. In the old Big 12, you don't see them again, but now you have the opportunity to see them again. And I could tell that both teams were kind of running some stuff that they hadn't really showed for the rest of the year. And you have to be better than a team twice in 1 year in order to get the bigger prize. That's, you know, it's tough luck, especially when, as we'll get to, there were a lot of opportunities to closen that game up and maybe even kind of send the game in another direction. But I think that kind of gets to my first point, in that this game showed that, you know, Oklahoma is back-to-back-to-back-to-back conference champions, and Texas is not.
Yeah. As much as it hurts to say, man, Oklahoma is really the big dog in the conference right now. And they have been for a while, and it's really been taking advantage of Texas being down. Texas finally gets back on their feet somewhat, and they have to face Oklahoma twice in 1 year. And it's hard to beat a good team twice in 1 year. Even Deontay Foreman said it on Twitter. It's hard to beat a team twice in 1 year. I said it in the last episode. And I will say it a billion more times because it's absolutely true. When you face another team, they know your tendencies. They know what they did wrong, and you don't know what you did wrong because you did everything pretty much correctly if you came out on top. So you have nothing to learn from the game. On top of it, they have a mental edge to the game for having, you know, wanting revenge. So with those two things combined, it really makes it difficult on the winning team of the first match.
Yeah, it makes it tough. But I think the other thing that we learned from that is that despite all that, despite Texas, you know, still kind of being still behind what you said, the big dog of the conference right now, Oklahoma, they're punching up. They punched up big time this year, and they're starting to punch with them. And that was just in year two of Tom Herman versus what's been a pretty smoothly run operation over at Oklahoma, with going from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley. Texas is right there with them. You can kind of go to the other side. Hey, they did beat them this year, and they were right there with a playoff team pretty much the entire way, and until a couple mistakes did them at the end. But it wasn't a blowout or anything like that. And that's just, you know, in just the second year of Herman being the leader at Texas. And I think with the way recruiting is going, you had a really good class last year. You're on your way to a really good class this year. And so, you know, think that the margin for error for Texas, or the, excuse me, the margin between Texas and Oklahoma is starting to get smaller and smaller.
It was very, very small, man. I mean, Texas already beat them. And last year they were very close to beating them. And this year they were close to beating them twice. So, yeah, that margin is tiny. That margin is very, very small. And but the funny thing is that 12-point loss was Texas's biggest, second biggest under Tom Herman in the past 2 years, the biggest one being the TCU last year by 17 points. But still looking at that, I mean, the first thing we thought about when we were coming together to talk about our general thoughts on the game is it just sucks. It just sucks losing to Oklahoma. It's no fun, especially with them being in the college football playoffs now. They have a Heisman. They're based, Kyler Murray is going to win the Heisman. And, you know, they're still, in the modern era, a better program than Texas has been.
Especially this century, without a doubt. They just have the advantage as far as conference titles goes, and that makes a big deal when you share a conference with them. But it's, like I mentioned, it's starting to look a little bit closer and a little bit closer.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the good thing here. We'll talk about, you know, our general thoughts on Tom Herman and the rest of the regular season later on. But the next thought we have to get to is, sticking to this game, Texas had chances to completely change the outcome of this game in their favor multiple times. And that's what really hurts. That's what really hurt about that game was the fact that you were so close to beating Oklahoma twice. So close. But it's just 2 points exactly that I'm thinking about where Texas had a chance to really, really change the outcome of that game. The first one being when you're up 14-6 with the ball and you're driving, that was a huge turning point, getting stopped in that beginning of that second quarter, because that was really where Oklahoma started to turn the tides of the game. What happens is Texas tries to run into a heavy Oklahoma box with their first play. Sam Ehlinger misses a little Jordan Humphrey in the second play, which could have been a first down with one of those where the wide receiver runs behind the line of scrimmage, missed it. And then the next play was Sam Cosmi getting bulldozed over because, I mean, we talked about it last show. The offensive tackles have trouble with guys who are more powerful than them. Well, you saw exactly what we were talking about, and Sam Ehlinger gets sacked 10 yards back, and there goes your chance of going up 21-6 on Oklahoma. And then the next series is Oklahoma figuring out, all right, well, we can pass the ball down the field, go to get the 4th-and-1. Texas gets them exactly where they want them. 4th-and-1 on the 31, Texas 31, and Texas comes to the box with 5 guys. Oklahoma has 2 guys in the backfield. I kind of understand because they kind of went Art Briles and really spread out their guys way out to the sidelines, but still, you know what's going to happen. And you have to understand, you know, the risk-reward of the situation, because if they get that 4th down, it's likely they're scoring. Or, you know, it's really hard to stop them. This is the best chance you have of stopping them. Go all out.
Right. That potential 21-6 scenario, in one I hadn't really considered before we started recording, but now that you mention it, that makes a lot of sense. That makes it a 2-score game, gives you a little bit more room for error against a team that you didn't have a whole lot with to begin with. And I know that rush you're talking about on Cosmi, that was, you know, that's a play where he looked like a freshman, and there haven't been a lot of those this year, but he did just kind of get thrown around. That 4th-and-1, I think if that's the one,
the next play was,
we're thinking about the same one.
Yeah.
The next play is a touchdown. They did miss a false start call on that 4th-and-1.
They missed a lot of calls, but
yeah, but that one was one of the easier ones to not miss. That's, you know, pass interference can be a little bit of a judgment call at times. That was definitely not one and should have been called. But yeah, the next play, pop it right in the end zone on was that Grant Calcaterra?
Mm-hmm. No, it was to C.D. Lamb.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah,
it was one where Caden great Stearns throw. Got lost in the backfield got turned around.
Another great throw over over those two safeties, and that changed, like you mentioned, kind of changed the complexion of the game. The one for me, and you know, I was told about this. I didn't really think about it at the time, but somebody mentioned how disappointed they were in the decision after the game. was second and 26 with Oklahoma had no timeouts left. You have an opportunity, especially with them coming out at the beginning of next half with the ball, to, you know, limit Oklahoma and really not give their offense that can score in under a minute a chance to score in under a minute. You could have gotten it down to, you know, at least like 20 seconds, maybe less than that. But instead, on second and 26 from your own 50, you try and throw. Ellinger's forced out of the pocket and can't complete. Then it's third and 26, and you can only run the clock out so much, only down to about, you know, a little bit more than a minute before they get the ball back with 59 seconds. And just around 59 seconds, and they just go all the way down. So if you don't pass on second and 20-something, whatever it was, you start running clock. There's not enough, you know, nowhere near as much time as Oklahoma and Kyler Murray eventually got. There's way, way, probably around half, I would say. And that's just, you know, kind of not trying to force something when you've, you know, obviously we talk about the 21-6 and wanting to go up two scores. But at the same time, you don't want to try and force it if it's not exactly there, especially with the half coming up. And for sure, you know that they're going to take the ball. Don't give them the opportunity to score two times in a row on opposite sides at halftime.
Yeah, and then the last one you're thinking of that really turned the game, that could have been a potentially really, really important turning point for Texas, was getting the ball on the 5-yard line on a crazy, crazy great play by Gary Johnson. Getting that fumble that you needed the entire game. You're asking, we need a turnover. We need a turnover. That's all we need. And we talked about it last show, was possessions without points. Forcing that would be huge against Oklahoma. Well, Texas didn't do that, and here is one of those possessions without points. And in fact, you're giving it back to Oklahoma with the safety. That was a huge turning point for Texas. That's not so much a management issue, although they didn't really help out Ellinger there with a play action in your own end zone. But Ellinger needed to understand and read what was going on in that cornerback blitz. That's on the quarterback to make sure that they don't get hit on that. And Ellinger didn't do his job.
Yeah, two things on that play. One, they had showed a corner blitz earlier in the game that they luckily saw in time, right, and checked out of. You know, Oklahoma checked out of it too, but they had saw it before it happened. Did not do that this time. You can even see on a replay Colin Johnson trying to motion like, hey, this guy's looking blitz. Sam Ellinger never looked at him, didn't look at him until he was down. But yeah, you're spot on about putting a play action that's not really much of a hard sell in the fake inside your own end zone when, you know, you don't want to give the ball back. It's basically a functional punt with the CeeDee Lamb fumble. You get a little bit of momentum that Tom Herman apparently doesn't believe in. And then, you know, you got a chance to go down and score and go ahead. And instead you give points and the ball back. Just a backbreaking situation there. Really wasn't a complex problem that they failed to pick up right before the snap.
Yeah, I mean, there were just a lot of points in that game and multiple third downs, and including that entire 6-minute drive by Oklahoma. Three third downs where Texas could have stopped them and at least limited the damage to an 8-point lead for Oklahoma. Instead, they didn't. And that 6-minute drive, three third downs, they could have stopped them. And Kyler Murray just picked them apart. It was not great. And that is a lot on the defensive coaches for a lousy pass contain, is what we'll call it, I guess, because it was more than just standing around and kind of playing patty cake with the offensive line, but also some mess ups in the backfield, not being able to get a hold of Kyler Murray, just Oklahoma being really good. There are a lot of points in this game. Texas could have completely turned this around, and that's what makes this game so frustrating.
Yeah, this isn't an offense designed to go 6 minutes, Oklahoma's. It's no. Usually done in probably around 3 minutes, 30 seconds at the most. And to give that up, that's just, it hurts. It shows that nothing you did defensively worked. All you were able to do is kind of limit them in front of you and give them opportunities to still catch the ball and make plays upfield, but not have to really fight for those catches. And just gave them time to bleed the clock, and end it with a touchdown like their offense is pretty adept at doing. So that one was just backbreaking on multiple fronts. Even though Texas' defense kind of had a struggling day, there were parts of Texas' offense that were really working, especially the matchup advantages they had with Lil Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson. Colin Johnson actually ended up setting a record in the bowl game for receiving yards that I believe Malcolm Kelly held, and that's just because just putting it lightly, Colin Johnson and little Jordan Humphrey are better football players than whoever they were lining across from that day. Colin Johnson, just 6'6", is taller than 5'10", every single day of the week, and he made it seem like that all day. Ehlinger was throwing pretty well-placed jump balls. He was getting some good yards after contact. Little Jordan Humphrey was kind of doing the normal things he does, creating enough separation and providing a big target for Ehlinger. And, you know, they just used that all game. It was kind of the majority of their passing offense. You got some plays with Andrew Beck and a couple passes to Devin Duvernay. But, you know, despite all the attention, those guys won constantly over the OU defensive backs.
I mean, Colin Johnson being left off the All-Big 12 team, even honorable mentions. And then he turns around and has 8 catches for 177 yards and a touchdown. Then that touchdown was really, really cool. And on top of that, going into the game, the over-under for Vegas on Colin Johnson was 78 yards on the entire game. He got that plus 99. So, I mean, Colin Johnson had an absolutely phenomenal game. He was doing his best to catch up to little Jordan Humphrey after missing, what was it, 2 games or a game. But Sam Ehlinger, again, showed he's on his way to being an incredible quarterback. He's on his way. Not there quite yet. Yeah, he did have that game-sealing turnover in the last drive, but, I mean, that was more due to a miscommunication between him and little Jordan Humphrey than it was Sam trying to force anything. And also, the game was just out of reach. But beside that, he went 23 for 36, 349 yards. Oklahoma helped that out, but he went to 6 different wide receivers. On top of that, 13 carries for 66 yards, 4 touchdowns to his name on the game. I might be jumping the gun here, but I think he put his name in the Heisman race next year for sure. At least gave the committee something to think about. Definitely in the mix for the Maxwell next year. He's killed it. I mean, yeah, he does miss a few open guys. I mean, once a game, twice a game, he misses a wide-open Devin Duvernay. But his decision-making has become stellar. His ability to extend plays has been helped out increasingly with the offensive line, and just his game management has become something that you were last year lamenting and this year praising.
Yeah, he's definitely played at a level this year to where he's helping Texas win games and kind of bringing the rest of the team's play up as a result of his own play rather than costing Texas games. And, you know, that some of that's a big jump from one year to the next. Obviously, you wanted him to protect the football much better than he did last year. He's done that. And I think he's gone, you know, a little bit better than a lot of people would have expected. Only, what, three or four picks this year in the entire year. I think he lost 5. One fumble against Tulsa. He's recovered all the rest of them. Like, he was not responsible for a lot of turnovers, and he was responsible for much more good than bad this year. The only thing is he got kind of hit by that injury bug. That's what his style of play can lend itself to. Even ESPN's commentators noted, man, you can tell he really doesn't like sliding. But it's something he picked up. He protected himself, protected the football, and played. Of course, he's going to get overshadowed by some of the guys who put up some big numbers and offenses designed for it, even though they're playing great, like Greer and Murray. But he played just as good and helped his team to victory in the same vein that those guys did this year.
I mean, yeah, this year, 38 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 1 fumble. Compared that to last year, 36 touchdowns and 12 fumbles, or 12 interceptions. I don't know how many fumbles he had. This year, he's taken that step up that you see from great quarterbacks from year one to year two. And next year, I don't expect him to take any steps backwards. The offensive line might not be as experienced as they were this year, next year, but still, I don't expect him to take any steps backwards. The guy has really put himself in a good position, and especially if little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson decide to return, which is looking like less and less of a pipe dream every single day. But the one thing, going back to the negatives here, is the Texas team in general, all of it, the offensive side, the defensive side, the special teams, they just weren't disciplined. And I know that there were big missed calls from refs, like the little Jordan Humphrey pass interference, or, you know, missing Oklahoma's illegal formation on their last touchdown, the missed false start, the phantom holding on Josh Thompson on little Jordan Humphrey's kick return. There's a lot of things that you can complain about the refs, and we just have to accept that the Big 12 refs are just god-awful. And I kind of want to go to the Big 12 Media Days this year and ask whoever the hell is in charge of the Big 12 refs, what are you doing about accountability with these refs? Because you've become the laughingstock of the college football world. But that's beside the point. Texas had 13 penalties for 128 yards. You cannot win a game that way. Whether or not the refs had a huge part in that or not, you cannot win a game that way. And they were delay of games. They were face masks that were obvious. They were false starts. They were obvious kick catch interferences. There's some plays that you're saying, okay, why and how did the ref see that? Or why didn't they throw the ball? Or why didn't they throw the flag? But there's some of these, like Chris Boyd's face masks, you know, all the pre-snap penalties that cost Texas the game. That's the real reason Texas lost this game, was they were not as disciplined as Oklahoma. They gave Oklahoma 128 yards to work with, and Oklahoma, you can't do that. You can't do that against that team. They're too good.
Yeah, it gifted a lot of yards, and it gifted opportunity. Those pass interferences helped move Oklahoma into scoring position. You just gave them extra opportunities that a team like Oklahoma doesn't really need, and they're going to take advantage of them. I believe they did almost every time. Chris Boyd accounting for that many penalty yardage by himself. You expect a little bit better from the first team corner in the conference. But it all goes to your overarching point, 128 free yards to this team in whatever fashion, whether on offense or defense, that's always going to come back to bite you.
And for all those who are still blaming the refs on this, and here's my little way I've been explaining it, is the refs held the gun to Texas's foot and Texas pulled the trigger. Texas shot themselves on the foot that way. They weren't helped out by the refs, but they did it themselves.
I think that's a good way to put it. They never helped themselves. They put themselves in opportunities to commit penalties, and good teams don't do that.
And it was guys like Samuel Cosmi and Elijah Rodriguez who have been having great years this year, but they just struggled. They struggled this game.
Yeah, that kind of actually leads me to my next point. You mentioned Elijah Rodriguez and Sam Cosmi not having a great day. A lot of that had to do with the day that the Oklahoma defensive line had. This is a unit that, for the most part, had kind of been gashed by pretty much everybody they played. It wasn't known as a unit of strength on that team. No real part of that Oklahoma defense was. But this is a team that limited, you know, Trey Watson, who had been pretty on his game, limited him to one of his lower totals of the year. Keontae Ingram completely taken out of the game, had just, I believe, 4 carries for about 8 yards or something really, really small.
Four
carries for 7 yards. If I'm remembering the number right, it was like 32 carries for 88 yards. And a lot of that has to do with how well the defensive line played. It's a credit to them. They played a lot better than they had all year. And they chose a heck of a game to do it in. Texas thought they'd be able to kind of run over Oklahoma. They had a lot of success rushing the football last time in the Cotton Bowl, but they only got 2.8 yards a carry. I mean, that's just not going to do it. 349 yards passing, it's great, but if you become one-dimensional, if an Oklahoma D-line makes you one-dimensional, it's just going to make it that much more difficult to win.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to my next point, which is that the Texas defense, while they weren't stellar, they did their job, but the Texas offense didn't. And I guess let me kind of qualify this point here. Texas did not help themselves out on defense. It's really hard to contain Kyler Murray. There were problems there. Chris Boyd having, 45 yards on him, something along those lines of penalties. Brecken Hager having that crucial face mask with 23 seconds left in the second quarter, to stop the clock and give Oklahoma incredible field position. A lot of big plays given up to Oklahoma. Yeah, I understand. And I'll even talk about real fast their inability to get pass rush on Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray put up 379 yards to the air. They couldn't get any pass rush against them because, as I said, the pass rush wasn't so much, you know, pass contain as it was pass and watch. Because they just passed the time and watched Kyler Murray. They mirrored his moves. That's about as much as they did to contain him. What you do as a contain is more like a kickoff where you have a lane and you need to get to that runner. And yeah, if you break contain, it's huge because that runner will have a lane to run. But if you, as long as you have that lane and your other guys keep the lanes as well, then you're good. And if you push the pocket closer and closer, as long as you, even if you get 3-4 feet, you're at least going to get a, you know, a hand in the face of a 5'9 quarterback and murk up his passing lanes. But Texas just didn't do that. Texas just sat and waited.
Texas was content to play 3-on-5 and hope that their guys kind of playing in space would have time to get to Murray before he got free. That's great, but 5 is usually going to beat 3 almost every – I mean, they're going to win most of those battles when you got two double teams and a single team against guys who've really struggled to get to the passer for most of the year, save Charles Omenihu. It didn't really work. The blitzes didn't get there in time. They didn't keep him contained enough or bothered enough to really fluster him away from being able to complete most of his passes. And you know, the one time they had a big hit lined up on him, he still avoided it. It was an incompletion, but he still avoided it. So they just, you know, he's already elusive as he is, but to not make him have to elude defenders, he's just going to sit in the pocket and be the elite passer that he is.
Right, and it really hurt Texas through the air. Again, 379 yards through the air for Kyler Murray, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, 11.1 yards per attempt. Even when Texas tried to turn the corner and get some pressure on him, they opened up lanes for Kyler Murray to run through. However, they ultimately kept them from scoring under 40 because they stopped the run. They made Oklahoma one-dimensional, and they did their jobs. I mean, they held Trey Sermon and Kennedy Brooks to 93 yards on 28 carries. That's 3.3 yards per carry. That's good. They held Murray to 10 carries for 45 yards, not including the 2 sacks for negative 6 yards. That's really good, especially against Kyler Murray. That's one of his lowest outputs this year. Texas had held the Oklahoma run game, which has been running over everybody all year long. They made them one-dimensional. All right, you can win that way. In fact, you can hold them under 40 points, which nobody besides Army, who had the ball for 45 minutes of the game, has done all year long. But your offense could not do their job. They could not hold up their end of the bargain. That is another big reason Texas lost. There's the lack of discipline, and then there's the offense. And you thought you had it figured out with this offense. I mean, don't get me wrong. The offense isn't bad. It wasn't bad. But Texas allowed the game to be dictated by Oklahoma, and Oklahoma said, we want this game to be settled through the air. Oklahoma did that by coming out in that 4-3 package. But what they did basically is they allowed an athletic linebacker like Caleb Kelly, who was a 5-star in high school, to just run around and attack the run all day long, which opened up for that defensive line to figure out the obvious passing ploys by Texas towards the end, which ended up costing Texas a few sacks, and allowed their freed up their other linebackers to search out plays and attack runs. I mean, that Texas ended up with, what was it, 32 carries for 88 yards on the day?
Yeah, it was not good.
And Texas, how they wanted to win that game was to run the ball. Tom Herman said that earlier in a press conference. He said, we want to win this game on the ground, but Oklahoma forced you to win it through the air. And Texas did a pretty good job. I mean, honestly, Sam Ehlinger, 2 touchdowns through the air. When they got inside the 20s, they started running the ball more effectively. Sam Ehlinger had 350 yards of passing. There was a lot of good from that offense. But ultimately, you're not going to beat Oklahoma in a passing contest when they have Kyler Murray, Marquise Brown, CeeDee Lamb in that Oklahoma offensive line. To tie this all together, it was the defense's job to limit Oklahoma to possessions without points, or at least field goals. They did that, and they did that very, very well. The offense's job was to have the possessions with the points and make them extended. However, Texas had multiple possessions where they had a safety, they had quick outs. They punted the ball all over the place, and the punts weren't great. The fact of the matter is Texas was not able to keep possession of the ball. They didn't have the time of possession win that you need against a team like Oklahoma, and Oklahoma, in turn, won the game. We didn't even talk about the running back pass to start the game off that really shut down the second drive of the game, which was looking to be a promising one. But whatever. It just sucks to lose to Oklahoma. It just does. And like I said in the last show, it means that you're 1-1 with Oklahoma. It's Joe, what do you think? Did it lessen the meaning of the Golden Hat?
No, not at all, because there's always a possibility Oklahoma isn't the team you face. They were almost, you know, they were 4 points away from not even being in the Big 12 title game.
Well, I meant this year. Did it lessen the meaning of the Golden Hat this year?
Not at all. It was a big win for Texas in that game to beat their conference rival. They didn't get, you know, what may be the more important trophy, but I don't think that lessens the importance of that regular season game in the Cotton Bowl.
Right, and you can always look at Oklahoma's record, see that 11-1, and grin to yourself, hey, that little smirch on their perfect record is because of you. But let's go ahead and talk about the regular season, the rest of the season here, because Texas really had, honestly, a really good season. I mean, tell me at the beginning of the season that Texas is going to the conference championship, and I would have been like, okay, unlikely, but I can see it happening. Tell me after Maryland, and I'm calling you crazy, but Texas did it. They turned around their season, and they played very well. I mean,
yeah, I think if you ask Texas fans, this would be a good season that was on the cusp of a great season. Maybe if Maryland goes the other way, I think primarily over any of the other four losses, or if you win the Big 12 championship, then it becomes a great season despite everything that happened. But Texas fans don't settle for good seasons. They want great seasons, and this was not one. It shows that Texas is going in the right direction, going from 6 regular season wins to 9 regular season wins. That's an obvious improvement in playing for a conference title, but it's not a great season. It's you know, 10 wins is kind of what people were used to, at least from that 2000s run. They expect to be 1 or 2 in the conference every single year. They expect good recruiting classes, and they probably expect a few more blowouts, if I had to really guess, and not one possession wins against Tulsa and one possession losses to Maryland. It's on its way up, but to call it a great season, I think maybe selling it a little bit too much.
To really kind of break down the season, what you had, 9 wins. The losses weren't who you thought they'd be to, but that's about the amount of losses you thought you'd have going into the season. You have a Big 12 conference championship game. You're in a New Year's Six Bowl. You beat Oklahoma. And you didn't get blown out in any games. But on the flip side, you didn't blow out anybody. And the games that you lost were very winnable and not games that you're really supposed to lose. It's very reminiscent of Mac Brown's first year, honestly, where you have a 9-5 year, second year in the program, turning it around. You face in a big bowl game, a big SEC opponent. Very reminiscent. But again, Joe, like you said, are you happy with your year 2 results?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not satisfied. You're not satisfied, are you?
No, I think there's so much more that could have been done this year. Maybe that would not have bumped up the win total, but it's just stuff that would have made it a little bit less, you know, a little less gnashing of teeth for Texas fans, I bet. Texas is one of those, it doesn't matter to me. Like, you know, if you win, you win. The tower turns orange for a 1-point win or a 100-point win. But there are some people who definitely want to win with style, and I'm not sure they really were satisfied at all this year, but you haven't won with style on this campus in, I think, 5 years. So yeah. Definitely a lot of good going on this year for the football program that portends to great in the future.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong here. 9 wins is great for Texas after coming off of the decade of misery they've had. Going to a conference championship is great. Going to a New Year's Six Bowl is great. But there's a lot to this season where you have to wonder how much more could Texas have done. There is a lot that is left on the table. The Oklahoma State loss, the West Virginia loss, the Maryland loss, all those games, you're sitting there thinking, how much more did Texas leave on the table that they could have eaten, they could have had? There's a lot. There's just so much. And, you know, I'm happy with what Texas has done, but I'm not satisfied. I'm not satiated, and I'm not thinking yet that Tom Herman is the guy to lead Texas to a national title. They really benefited a lot from some of these teams having bad years, like Kansas State, like TCU, like USC. A lot of the teams that you thought were going to be, you know, the before the season, the teams to beat in the Big 12 were teams that ended up having a lot of mistakes and a lot of issues and just things that nobody saw before the season. But Texas struggled against teams like Oklahoma State and Maryland, which are teams you shouldn't struggle against. They need consistency, and that's something they haven't seen over these past 2 years. Now, is that a lot to ask for a coach with consistency, with a roster that is still has some huge holes? Yeah, maybe it might be, but still, that's what you want to see in a program. You want to see consistency. You want to see the teams that you need to beat, you are beating, and the teams that you want to beat, you at least have a close game with. You kind of have half and half of that. You're keeping it close with teams that you want to beat, but you're having trouble beating the teams that you need to. And that's really where I'm seeing the issue so far here, and that's why I'm not satiated. That's why I wouldn't be satiated if I was a Texas fan if I'm watching Tom Herman. You can like what he's done, but you can't say he's the guy yet.
Right, but that's tough for any coach after 2 years. I think you just have to be really satisfied with, or not, obviously not satisfied, but just, yeah, like you mentioned, just happy with where they're at.
Right.
Happy for the improvement and happy for the best football this campus has seen in quite a few years.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people think I'm a Debbie Downer with this type of take, but I feel like that's just a realistic take. If you want to be back to the national championship level, then you can't be satiated with a 9-win in 4-loss season, but regardless of what happened, because there were a lot of games left on that schedule that should have gone the other way. West Virginia, maybe not, but definitely Oklahoma State and definitely Maryland. You should have lost maybe 2 games this year with how down college football was, with how down the Big 12 was on with some certain teams. This year should have been a 10-win season. And due to inconsistency on this team, which, it's hard to really blame a coach coming into their second year. You didn't have it. And before we get out of here, Joe, I just want to get your thoughts on Urban Meyer retiring once again.
Well, they're going the Riley route. They are passing the keys from a coach who's been there for a while and has set an standard of excellence for the program to a up-and-coming coordinator that has a lot of promise and had a lot of ability as a coordinator, and trusting that he'll be able to do everything with the head as a head coach without much difference. I like it. I think it's a good idea. They could have gone national and kind of maybe tried to get some Matt Campbell or somebody like that, but they're going with, you know, they I watched a press conference a little bit today, and I think they're very, very accurate when they said, we have a strong infrastructure here,
right,
that will be good for Coach Day to take over. And, you know, it's going to preserve the class. I think maybe they had one decommit and may have some attention from others, but most everything's going to stay the same, very similar like it did with Riley. I think it's a good idea. It's a little bit of a risk, but you've got, like I mentioned, you got a lot of things going on at Ohio State that'll help him out right from the get-go.
Heads up, Texas and Florida State. This is how you do coach in waiting.
Well, there were some extenuating circumstances with Ohio State.
Right. Yeah, you're right. But still, that's how you set up a head coach. And you give them the infrastructure, and you go and you just hand the keys off to a guy who is the second in command. And you say, all right, it's yours from here. You set them up with everything. And then if they fail, it is 100% on them. But it's a lot easier to do that than bring in your entire staff and restart from the ground up. Your players are on it. Your players are with it. Your staff is already there and comfortable. Everything right there. You're right. The infrastructure is set up. It's perfect. And that's why Oklahoma had such a smooth transition from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley. I would expect the same thing for Ryan Day. But on that note, y'all, I think we're going to get out of here. This has been your 4th and 5. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And Joe Cook, where can we find you? You
can find all my stuff at InsideTexas.com, or you can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
Or you guys can find both of us at the Hornscast channel on Twitter and Facebook or on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or anywhere else y'all can find a podcast. Anyways, thank y'all for listening. We will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.